You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach talking Boston Red Sox with MLB.com's Red Sox beat reporter, Ian Brown. Ian, what can they do about this first base situation? I guess the first question is Mike Napoli, is this really bad? Is he approaching done, or is this a really long slump for a guy who's had really long slumps before?
Yeah, it's a really long slump, and I think he's in his own head. And to me, for a guy who was the American League Player of the Week, it was, a month ago now? If he hit 5 home runs in a week a month ago, it's hard for me to think that the guy is washed up at 33 years old or whatever he is. I just think that he's gotten into some extremely bad habits at the plate, and for whatever reason, the slumps have gone on longer than usual. But, you know, if it wasn't for that 5 homers in a week a month ago, maybe we would think he's done. But, you know, you don't lose it that fast, you know, especially at that age. The guy's it's not like he's in his late 30s. He's still early 30s. So, you know, I think he still has some baseball in him, and for whatever reason, he's just having, you know, a really bad season. I remember Mike Lowell had a season like this for the Marlins in 2005 where everyone thought he was completely done, and then he came to the Red Sox and had some really good years.
So while they're waiting for him to get sorted out, yeah, what exactly can they do? Because this is not a team that's in a position to be carrying guys who aren't performing. They're not in good enough shape, and they're not playing well enough to be looking to upgrade at positions where guys are really struggling.
No, I mean, you make a good point. And the one thing the Red Sox can do right now, and I'm sure they will do this tonight, is, you know, you can put Brock Holt at first base against tough righties. You know, Mike is, for example, Bud Norris is a guy who Mike Napoli has struggled against in his career. So you can put a Holt in there. And that's where, you know, if Holt's going to be playing some more first, then you need some more help in right field. A left-handed bat in right field. You have Diaza. You have Bradley, who's doing really well at Triple-A. And the only reason I can think of why they're not bringing Bradley up is because they're planning on him packaging him in a trade by July 31st, and they'd rather trade those gaudy Triple-A numbers he has right now rather than bring him up to the majors and watch him hit .210 again. So, and then you have Shane Victorino, Shane Victorino comeback point, 5.0 or whatever it is now. Shane's going out on a rehab this weekend. Hopefully, he did provide a little spark the last time he came back. Unfortunately, it was short-lived. So you do have some options, and you also have Alan Craig who could play first base down at Pawtucket. So there's a whole lot of things they could do internally. This isn't something they necessarily have to make a trade for to address. They can address this in-house, and I think that, the coming days they're going to try to figure out a way to do that.
Well, bless you. You just set me up. I hadn't asked about him in a few weeks, so we're in a position where now I kind of have to. The wrench, Alan Craig, is putting up decent numbers. Now, it's up and down. He's not obliterating the ball, but he is getting on base. He's been decent down there, and I think he's at least a passable defensive first baseman. Has he hit enough to where he's back in the picture, to where he's at least an option again when they look at what they've got there?
Yeah, I think Craig is working his way into the mix. I mean, how could he not? I mean, this guy is, he's hit for most of his career, and he's another guy. You really lose it that fast. So, he's a guy who could resurface. I think that they want to exhaust every chance to get Napoli going here, because not only is Napoli a huge, part of the fabric in that clubhouse, a glue guy, so to speak, but they really like his defense at first base. And, his hot streak, they're almost worth waiting for sometimes, because he can sort of carry a team. He carried a team for a week this year, but he's a guy who's carried a team for 2-3 weeks in the past. Been a big game player throughout his career, so I think they're going to give it every chance before they flat out pull the plug. But you know what time of year it is, Matthew. It's late June. Teams are going to have to start making definitive decisions. July is really when you make a decision about the kind of team you're going to have for the rest of the season. So these are all internal discussions the Red Sox are having on a daily basis.
To continue bouncing around a little bit, Eduardo Rodriguez, we knew he had really good stuff, and he did have one clunker, but it is not supposed to be as easy to make this transition as he has made it. What is it that has allowed him to translate what everybody knows is a big arm into being, so far, a really good major league starting pitcher?
Yeah, you know, I think everybody knew about the stuff that Eduardo Rodriguez had, but I think the poise was a little bit underrated. And going around and talking to different guys in the clubhouse, you know, whether it's Clay Buchholz or whether it's pitching coach Carl Willis, the thing that really impresses Deb about Eduardo is that he does not get unnerved. Even that game he struggled against Toronto. Now, mind you, that game against Toronto, he was facing a buzzsaw with that team. They were just in the, one of those zones. And, you know, he also had three or four drop pop-ups by other guys that game. So that was even one of those games that didn't look as bad as it was. But, yeah, just the composure he has for a 22-year-old kid, pretty impressive. So they're really quietly very excited about this kid. They think they might have a guy who can be a one- or two-starter for several years to come. And they just hope that he can sort of keep this role going right here.
I know they were really excited about him when they got him, and some people at the time said he was the best pitching prospect to change hands at the deadline. But even so, as good as Andrew Miller is and as good as Andrew Miller was for the Orioles after the deal, I don't think if they knew they were giving up a guy who's been this good, they maybe would have given him up for 20 innings of a left-handed reliever. So all of that is a long way of prefacing the question. Did the Red Sox see something the Orioles didn't? Were the Orioles just that dead set that they had to have Andrew Miller no matter what? How did they get this guy who is not only this good, but right away? You know, it's not like they got a guy who was 4 years away and sort of turned into something over time. They got a guy who was right there and is very good right now. How did that happen that they get this kind of value for 20 innings of admittedly a great left-handed reliever?
I mean, from a Red Sox perspective, this was a no-brainer, because they were 15 games out or whatever they were at the time. Miller was going to be a free agent. They knew they were going to try and bring Miller back, whether he was spent the rest of the year with the team or not. So they figured, why not trade him? And Andrew Miller was really a great chip for them last July. And the Red Sox balanced 5, 6, 7 offers around for Andrew Miller. And I think that's where it helped with the Orioles, because the Orioles were competing with a lot of other teams for Andrew Miller. They really wanted him, and the Red Sox got the pitching prospect they wanted. Now, you can question, you know, did Dan Duquette get a little too short-term oriented in making that trade? I mean, in fairness to Dan Duquette, he's trying to win a World Series last year, you know, and he didn't foresee perhaps some of the injuries that his Orioles team was going to have down the stretch last year, where maybe that team would have won the whole thing last year if they didn't, you know, have so many injuries they had. So, you know, I think it was a decent baseball move. And, you know, the Red Sox were on, you know, the infamous Larry Anderson-Jeff Bagwell trade. It was sort of a similar thing in 1990 where, you know, they're trying to win a division and a World Series, and they trade a future star for, you know, a guy who gives them 2 months of relief. So very, very kind of parallel there. But, yeah, I mean, easy to second-guess that trade from a Baltimore standpoint. But the Red Sox were very high on Eduardo Rodriguez all along.
And then one other thing, and the note, the line in my note says, Pablo and Instagram. Really? And, I mean, essentially that's my question. Look, I know that this is not only a Red Sox rule, but a Major League rule, but is there anywhere other than Boston and maybe New York where this becomes the level of story? I mean, is this as silly as it seems from outside?
No, I just think that, you know, it's one of those, like you say, it's a Boston-New York thing. We have all kinds of bloggers around here are monitoring players' Instagrams and what time they're sending things out. And just, you know, the way that came out, nobody would have ever known about this if it wasn't for, you know, like I said, a blogger posted, oh, this is interesting that this person posted this thing during the game. I would think, Matthew, you know, players are going into the clubhouse all the time. And, you know, I would think guys check their phones. That was kind of stupid of him to push the like button. And I think it was just kind of one of those, we've all said or done stupid things in the spur of the moment that once you do it, you're like, oh, I wish I could take that back. And I think that's all that this was. And I think that John Farrell had been under a lot of heat because people thought maybe he should have been harder on Wade Miley for that situation. They thought maybe he should have been harder on Hanley Ramirez for some of his mental mistakes he's made. So I think that the Red Sox felt they had, you know, the way the team was playing, they had no choice but to give Sandoval, you know, a benching that game, where maybe this is something that could have been handled a little bit differently. But yeah, definitely a controversy that probably got a little more, you know, attention than deserved.
And to follow on Sandoval, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like, am I right in saying that there is at least some level of, at least within the perception, the public perception, media perception, and this is just a setup, so this is a yes or no, that he's been a disappointment with his performance overall this year?
Yeah, you could say that until he got, you know, he's gotten red hot here over the, you know, essentially since the Instagram thing. But, you know, look at his numbers at this time last year. I think he's been a second-half player at times. You know, like we talked about with Napoli, a streak player at times in his career. And, you know, I think that if anything, Sandoval's defense has been what's been disappointing. I think his offense is pretty much, you know, what you see is what you get. Some weeks he's going to be really hot. Other weeks he's going to be cold. But, yeah, defensively they like a little more concentration out of him. But, you know, other than that, I think the team is basically getting what they expect. Anytime a team spends that much money on a player, I think sometimes the fans and media might expect a little more. But I don't think that Pablo Sandoval is that different a player right now than he was, you know, all those years in San Francisco. I think there's just more attention on him because he's playing in Boston.
Well, yeah, that's really the answer to my follow-up, which was, do they not know this is what he is? I mean, he's had a couple of great Octobers, but this guy isn't a 320 hitter. He's a 270, 280 hitter with moderate power who doesn't strike out much and is a better third baseman or has been than he gets credit for. But was there an expectation that he would be more than that?
No, not from the team itself. Like I said, the team is getting what they expected from this guy. And, you know, media, fans, they see a guy sign for $95 million. They see a guy's won three World Series. The only times a lot of these fans have watched Pablo Sandoval is in October when he's just, you know, last year he was terrific. So, you know, I think that fans sometimes don't look deep down inside the numbers at what this guy is a player. But, no, like I said, the only complaint the Red Sox have had about Sandoval is they thought he'd be a little better on defense. He's made some sort of careless mistakes with the glove. And aside from that, the Red Sox are getting kind of what they expected from Sandoval. And it's just one of those things. The team isn't playing well, so there's more, you know, there's more scrutiny on it right now.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Ian Brown, thanks for taking some time to talk here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks everybody for listening.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.